Thank you. Okay, I'd like to call to order the House Committee on Education for May 1st, 2017. Okay, what we're going to do, we've got a couple of things today. First of all, it's Teacher Appreciation Week. National Teacher Appreciation Week. Tomorrow is National Teacher Appreciation Day. So I just wanted to go through and announce that. So be nice to your teachers and your children's teachers. And then also what we're going to be, do I have to gavel this in? What we're going to be doing is we will not be working House or Senate Bill 205 today. Mm-hmm. We've got to have some amendments and some fiscals doing it, so we will put that on another time. So it will just be informational hearing, very good one. So I'm going to open up the informational session on threat assessment in the schools. So would you guys like to come on up? We've got Sheriff Craig Roberts, Dave Novotny, and Kevin McDonald from the Beaverton Police Department. Welcome.
Well, good afternoon. Chair Doherty and members of the House Committee of Education, for the record, I'm Clackamas County Sheriff Craig Roberts. And I'm appearing today as the chair of the Oregon Task Force on School Safety to provide information on Oregon's new student safety tip line, Safe Oregon. We're excited to talk about a lot of things and benefit that that's had to the state. The proposed statewide multidisciplinary assessment teams for Oregon schools, and really they're much like our current child abuse multidisciplinary team approach. I'd also like to introduce to my left my fellow panelist, School Safety Task Force Vice Chair. To my far left is Dr. Dave Novotny, who will address the statewide proposal for regional school safety MDT assessment teams. Dr. Novotny has been absolutely instrumental in the task force and has just brought a wealth of information to help us move forward in this effort. He served as the superintendent of the Willamette ESD since 2012 and his broad experience using the Salem-Keizer threat assessment model has been a big help to our team. Sergeant Kevin McDonald, School Resource Officer for Beaverton Police Department, will provide real-life examples how a threat of harm assessment can save lives. Sergeant McDonald has worked for the Beaverton Police Department for 22 years. He oversees a team of 7 school resource officers, which serves the Beaverton School District of 41,000 students and 4,500 staff members. So before I turn it over to the panelists, I just want to say that schools are really in need of assistance when it comes to managing threat of harm and suicide. It's one of our big concerns. Just last month, I attended a meeting of Clackamas County superintendents, and one of the things I heard, it often falls to the superintendents to make that call, whether a student has been engaged in threats of violence. Should they return to school? And if so, really, what are those conditions when they do return to school? And one superintendent described to me as it really is terrifying to have to make that call and that decision. Well, school safety multidisciplinary assessment teams help support school personnel in making that call. So before you hear about how the assessment works, I just want to clarify for the purpose of our presentation today that we're using the term safety assessment and student threat assessment to refer to really is one and the same process that we're talking about. But historically, the use of the term threat assessment falls at 2004, a joint guide issued by the United States Secret Service and the United States Department of Education on prevention of targeted violence in schools. The guide recommends an assessment process that analyzes fact and evidence of student behavior, focusing on actions, communications, and specific circumstances that may or may not suggest that the student is planning violence or self-harm. For the purpose of advancing this process in Oregon schools, stakeholders on the Oregon School Safety Task Force recommend using the term safety assessment, representing a safety net for all students. So now I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Novotny, who's going to talk more about the assessment.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave Novotny, and I work as a superintendent for the Willamette Education Service District. And as you already know, I'm appearing today as vice chair of Oregon Task Force on School Safety to talk about the importance of creating a statewide student threat assessment system for Oregon schools. I would like to be able to share a PowerPoint presentation with you as we go through. To provide you a little bit of context for this conversation, the critical work of the task force is really illustrated in a very short video titled Evan. This particular video was produced by the Sandy Hook Promise, which is a national nonprofit of surviving parents of students who were lost in the Sandy Hook Elementary School tragic event. With your permission, I'd like to be able to share this with you.
Got some news today from the radio man. He spoke the words somber and as softly as he can. The world stood still and the sky opened up. I made my way to fill up my coffee cup. Then it occurred to me as the daylight sky shone blue, today's the day that Johnny met June. He knew that he would. He was gonna hang around here for as long as he could. The days went by and hours idle passed. He was never sure just how long he would last. But there's not much love in a lonely room. Today's the day that Johnny met June.
Have a good summer.
You too.
Thanks.
Hey, you must be bored.
No way.
This is the guy that I was running through the library.
You're kind of
like
guilty. So. Oh my God. So you like to write on desks?
Yeah, that's what I do.
I thought that the short video provides a little bit of context. Obviously, the members of the Task Force on School Safety would like to see the state have a system that can interact with students who are starting to show signs like what we saw in this video. And I think really the key here is the early identification, assessment, and early intervention to prevent these type of tragic events from happening. Currently in our state, some schools have a threat assessment system in place. I'm afraid, though, most do not. In my education service district, we have 19 school districts that utilize a threat assessment system that has provided a high level of safety and security for the school districts in my region. And it's really based on the good work coming out of the Salem-Keizer School District. And so the statewide system that the task force is proposing is really modeled after the good work of the Salem-Keizer School District. So I think it's important to emphasize that threat assessment is a proven method of early intervention. The key is finding the warning signs, interacting with the youth, doing an assessment, and intervening before something bad happens. And To be clear, it is recommended as a best practice by the U.S. Department of Education, the FBI, and the U.S. Secret Service. There are a lot of school districts that have threat assessment across the nation, but there are very few states that have statewide systems in place. The thing that the task force is really grappling with is we have it in some locations, but really all students in the state can benefit from this type of a system going forward. It's also important to point out that a threat assessment is an evidence-based multidisciplinary approach. Multidisciplinary means that you want more than just a school counselor to have eyes on this situation. Generally, you have a school counselor or an administrator, a member of law enforcement, a member of mental health, all working together to interact with the student, okay, to assess their level of risk. So once again, the focus is on early identification, assessment, early intervention, and then really important is the support for students and their families to make sure that the type of violent act does not occur. The system that we're proposing would establish multiple regions across the state of Oregon with one or more regional threat assessment specialists designed to support each region. The staffing configuration would look like the following. We would have one program administrator based at the Oregon Department of Education, and then we would have 14 regional threat assessment specialists. The proposed org chart is pretty standard. Once again, the program would be administered through the Oregon Department of Education, one person there to make sure that the program is rolled out with fidelity across the state. We also believe, importantly, over on the right-hand side, that there would need to be a steering committee. To be real candid with everyone in the room, threat assessment isn't a standard practice across the state, and there are literally just a few dozen people in the state who could really advise the rollout of a program like this. We would like to solicit the assistance of 6 to 8 of those individuals to help guide the program forward. And then we have not designated the regions, but it would really be based on an assessment of geography, student population, access to services, and the needs based on that region. That's where we would have the regional threat assessment specialists assigned. So the logical question is really, what would these regional threat assessment specialists do for our state? First and foremost, they would provide training and standardized protocols for staff in the region. We want all regions in the state to use the same set of protocols when assessing risk of students, consult with school and community-based threat assessment teams, and they could also deploy the multidisciplinary teams to schools to assess risk and assist in identifying supports and intervention for youth. In addition, they could provide supervision strategies for students who are in at-risk situations, help connect students and families with community-based services and related supports, and then, of course, ensure program fidelity. With your permission, I have one more short video. It's 3 minutes in length. And really, in our region, we have the Mid-Valley Threat Assessment Team that works with the 19 school districts in our region. And what we've done is we've produced a very small, short video, and they're going to share their professional perspective with you as far as why we should consider creating a statewide system.
Kids are different these days. They're growing up faster with the presence of the internet and social media. They're exposed to so many more things, and there's so much more violence.
People who plan and carry out targeted attacks do not just snap. They engage in a number of behaviors that are necessary to carry out that act. These behaviors are recognizable and can be addressed through intervention that is based upon the recommendations of the United States Department of Ed, the Secret Service, and the FBI.
What's important is that we develop a culture and a environment within our schools where students feel safe to talk to the person that can actually take action and intervene and mitigate any risk that's present.
Some of those areas that are more rural, they don't have all the resources that we do. And by having a statewide system, we could give students better access to the resources that we have in the entire state.
A threat response system is considerably more cost effective than the actual and human costs of a violent act.
Each time a story hits a headline, it affects families across the nation, not just where it happens. Students can be afraid to go to school, parents afraid to send their students to school, teachers are concerned about could it happen here.
If teachers and students are too fearful to learn and teach, then that stops education. If education stops, that has a profound impact on the community. By following the key elements of the proposal, early identification, assessment, early intervention, and ongoing support, dangerous and problematic behavior can be addressed and eliminated.
In the acts of targeted violence that we've studied, there's always some what we call leakage. They usually put out, while they're on that path to targeted violence, the fact that they're on that path. And if you could recognize those things, you can prevent them.
The proposal will establish threat assessment teams in each school. If a student's needs exceed the available resources of the school, the community team provides additional resources and support.
You have all those partners putting their resources and ability and information together to come up with a better management plan.
A multidisciplinary collaboration is essential to the success of threat response and intervention.
Our goal with this proposal is to see a statewide system in place where we're all speaking the same language, we're all following the same protocol, we're providing psychological safety and security for every student, parent, and staff member throughout the school. We're seeing collaboration, the breaking down of informational silos, and we're seeing everybody working together to make our school safer.
So the proposed budget for the system that we envision for the state of Oregon would look like this. The annual budget would be a little over $2 million, so approximately $4.1 million for the biennium. And that does not include the analysis that the Oregon Department of Education has done. I haven't actually seen those numbers, but this would be our particular estimate for the biennium. One of the things that I wanted to discuss,
and
one of
Dave, that's statewide.
Statewide,
correct.
Yes. So we also consider threat assessment as an investment in the state of Oregon. And I want to be careful about going down this path, but the cost of prevention is steep, but the cost of not addressing school-related violence and youth suicide is incredibly expensive. The research as far as the cost for some of these tragic events that occurred at Virginia Tech, Columbine, Sandy Hook, and so on are rough at best, but these numbers give you an indication that when we do have a tragic event, it is extremely costly. It would be a better investment for the state of Oregon to consider putting money up front to prevent these type of incidents from occurring for a number of reasons. My final thoughts, we believe that implementing a threat assessment system is effective. We think it's cost effective for the state of Oregon. We think we'll be able to address multiple types of threats that currently exist in our state, and we think it is the right thing to do for Oregon. With that, I'll say thank you very much, and just remind you that the members of the Oregon Task Force on School Safety believe that all Oregon schools need access to the additional layer of protection provided by a well-conceived student threat assessment program, much like we've been able to experience in my region. Thank you for the opportunity to share this information. I appreciate it very much. And I'll turn this over to Sergeant McDonald.
Okay, thank you. If you want to get a microphone over to you.
All right.
Thank you.
Hopefully we can work through the technology here. All right. Excellent. Thank you. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, thank you for letting me be here today to talk to you about some real-world examples of threat assessment cases that we've had in the district that I work with. Paul M. Paul,
and we need to have your name for the record, please.
I'm sorry about that. Sergeant Kevin McDonald with the Beaverton Police Department.
Thank you.
So Paul is a middle school student, studied the Columbine High School shooting extensively. It wasn't until Paul was a freshman in high school that he was seen in class by another student on his iPod looking at numerous photos of the Columbine shooting. The alarmed student came forward to school administrators, who in turn notified law enforcement. Further investigation revealed that Paul had attempted suicide several times. One of the suicide attempts included attempted hanging during the previous summer from that school year. Paul was fixated on three love interests at the school, and they were not reciprocal towards him. Paul had joined a social media group that supported the Columbine High School shooting, and he would regularly post about killing people. Paul was familiar with firearms, as he had previously gone shooting with his uncle. Paul had gone as far as to solicit others to obtain a firearm. Paul had a journal referencing shooting others for revenge, and he had a jacket with the initials NBK, Natural Born Killer, on the jacket. Trent D. Trent caught the attention of school administrators when they received a tip that Trent had a kill list. The school administrator had found a large stack of drawings of notebook paper in his possession. The stack of papers depicted violent acts, including Trent killing his girlfriend. The extensive kill list were people that Trent wanted to kill, and he would periodically review the list. The list included people that bullied him or didn't care enough about him. Trent was familiar with firearms and had gone shooting. When the school resource officer made a home visit, talking with Trent's parents, they discovered that there were firearms in the household. None of the firearms were secured, and there was access to thousands of rounds of ammunition in the household. Those firearms included rifles, handguns, and shotguns. Trent reported feeling isolated and often thought about killing himself. None of these students made headlines. No one was ever harmed. The names have been changed, obviously, for this presentation, but these are real students in our school district. Our district isn't unique in this respect. The types of threats like this happen in every district around this state. There's no perfect plan to eliminate these threats or acts of violence. What we have to do is try to reduce and change the pathway of violence as a community. Student threat assessment is not a way to label a student. Student threat assessment is a way to let the student know that there are community members wanting to help them succeed. This effort doesn't fall on any one person or agency. It's parents, it's teachers, it's the juvenile department, it's DHS, it's law enforcement, it's mental health, and others. It is a way to show that the student will be supported by the community to make them successful. The Oregon School Safety Task Force has worked extremely hard for the last few years to find the most suitable solution to reduce large-scale violence in our school systems. The tip line, Safe Oregon, has been successful in providing another layer of safety to our students. Student threat assessment complements the tip line. So, in closing, what happened to Paul E.? Paul E. did have some mental health issues and was placed in an environment more suitable with those mental health issues. Paul did have a safety plan that was periodically reviewed and eventually ended this last January. I actually spoke with Paul's counselor this morning, and he's been doing exceptionally well, and his counselor told me that he's on the track to graduate next year. He's a junior in high school. Trent D., I did some checking on him. He had a safety plan initially and followed the safety plan within the school system. He too had some mental health issues that were eventually addressed and managed to graduate this last year. In closing, I'd like to thank you for listening about threat assessment, and please consider threat assessment as a viable solution to ensure the safety of our students. Thank you.
So before we wrap it up, we have some other presenters, but I just kind of wanted to shift and just say, you know, one of the key things that we really see in our state as an issue is self-harm and suicide, and it is a big concern for us. And I think as you see us in law enforcement here, our goal is to keep them out of our system and to plug them into resources. And I will just tell you that seeing a middle school student cutting is absolutely disheartening. and to see the resources that where we really should be coming together to figure out what the game plan is to get that child on the right track, it isn't happening. It is people in their own silos really trying to address it the best they can. And that's why we so much believe in a multidisciplinary approach to make sure we're coming together and what is the best action. And so when we can see that from Beaverton is really pulling the people together, but there are many parts of the state where we're really not doing that. People are doing their best, but I believe the best answer for our kids is really coming together. So, Chair Doherty, I turn it over to you if you have any questions or any other representatives before we bring up our next presenters.
Thank you. Any questions of the panel? Representative Solman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this presentation very much. I was curious when you were looking at the, you're talking about maybe approaching this from a region side. How many ESDs are there across the state? And is it possible to look at that as being a region? Or is that what was at the end?
Yes. So, Chair Doherty, Representative Solman, there are 19 ESDs in the state of Oregon, and we do believe that the model would probably have those regional threat assessment specialists based in many of those ESDs.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What does it actually look like when a student has a safety plan? If I followed that correctly.
Sure. A safety plan can look different ways depending on the type of threat that's made. Excuse me. A lot of the threats that we get typically stem from social media. And so safety plans can include checking with the student daily, having a staff member do that, checking their backpack, their locker, making sure that they're following through with mental health appointments, really letting the student know that not just one person's kind of keeping an eye on them, but the community is keeping an eye on them. Sometimes they cross the line into a criminal realm and they may end up being adjudicated through the juvenile system, and that's just one more piece if that situation. Most of the cases that we deal with in our district, we've had 120 threat assessments this year, 13 of which raised to a higher level. Most of them generally aren't that serious, but there are some that certainly reach those levels.
Follow-up.
Just one quick follow-up. What does, and you don't need to be too detailed here, but I'm just wondering what a threat assessment team discussion would be like.
So we usually look for input from the parents initially and really try to learn about the student and where the trying to really source where the anger is coming from or mental health issues, where those issues are coming from, what does the family dynamic look like, what resources are available in our community that we could get the family connected with to help the student get off a pathway of violence. And so that could be any number of people who are having a piece of it, but no one entity has the burden of making sure that they're the sole point of contact to make sure the student's successful.
Okay. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the second time I've heard this presentation. We also heard it in Judiciary. It had a slightly different flavor. And I appreciate the update, if you will, today on the two students that you discussed anonymously. And where they're at today in graduation is huge, just huge. My question is, I'm sitting here, and you started to go down that road with Representative Wilson. Anytime you're working with kids and you identify an issue, and part of the plan is you can't continue this behavior, or you can't do this, and it's part of that plan is the no. Is what I say. You can't do these things, and to make sure you don't do these things, we're going to put these supports in place so you don't do these things. That's part of it. That's very legitimate. But you can't do that forever. So there has to be the second element, which is this is why it's good for you to change directions. This is what's in it for you. How do you, and you use terms like we bring in supports and that kind of thing. I'm looking for a little more detail. How are you transitioning from, and this isn't directed at law enforcement. This is what we do. We do it with our kids. I do it with the other kids in my house. Here's the rules. You follow the rules. And this is what you get over here, and this is the part that motivates. Tell us, give us some more details on how you motivate them, because it's a big stretch to go from talking about killing people to being a high school graduate.
Yes.
There's a few steps in between.
So these things don't change overnight. Certainly, it does take some time. And with these, the plans that are developed, the safety plans, typically there will be review by the team. You know, how is this student doing? Are they meeting the benchmarks? Are things improving in the household? Getting feedback from the parents and really finding out how they're being successful. I think there are some students that we'll probably have to monitor pretty closely for a while because I don't know if they'll ever get to that good point. That happens. And so I think it's really just keeping track of where they are and making sure that they are having their needs met. Social media, I was kind of talking about that, and electronics tend to be a big issue with us, and that is monitoring those, taking away privileges when they're at school, allowing them for behavior that's good behavior, that they'll get those things back. Those are just some, I guess, minute examples of a particular case, but really it is, I think the team looking at all the possible options that can make the student successful and applying those and not just saying, okay, well, we looked at this and now we're done with it. It's next month. Okay, how is so-and-so doing? Are they on track? What could we do differently to make this student, you know, what other things are we not thinking of to help them out? So it's a constant. And, you know, these two examples, both of them, their pathway to violence changed. Whatever triggers were making them focus on violent acts, those interventions worked. And I don't know if there's to say that mental health was the issue. I don't know if it was a particular teacher in their classroom that made a difference. But I do know that having multiple angles look at the problem certainly creates more positive results.
Follow up? Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that. So many of these students, almost universally, we hear about them being bullied, being picked on. Are these students remaining in the school, the same school? Because as much as we'd like to think as adults we get to control a lot of things, we can't control the atmosphere in the school and other students. So talk to me about that.
So bullying, well, getting to your question, are they remaining in the same school? Sometimes. Sometimes it's when you look at the student a little bit closer, maybe you identify learning issues that were the school was unaware of. And so that could change their placement. I think the gut instinct is to say they're, you know, threatening the school, let's yank them out of school. Well, that's not the case. We want them to be in school. We want them to, if we're not seeing them day to day, we don't know what they're thinking or what they're looking at or what they're doing. We want them to be in school. And sometimes that does mean other school settings that are more appropriate for their learning, whether it's a special ed program. The one student that I talked about, Paul E., he was actually in a comprehensive high school. He went to an alternative school for a period of time and slowly was able to get back to a place where he could go to a comprehensive high school where he is at today and will graduate next year. So that can vary.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Pearson, I'll get back to you.
Thank you. I appreciate you being here today. I've got a question, and I've heard some of these over the years as well, two presentations. talk to me about the parent engagement once you've identified one of these children. And I've got three teenage boys. If the school resource officer in my community showed up at my front door and said, hey, we've got a problem with one of your kids, I'm going to take that absolutely seriously, and we're going to have real coming to Jesus in our house. But I have to imagine that, you know, are you up against, as you were identifying these children, showing up to go talk to parents? I mean, how much resistance are you getting from parents? How supportive are parents? What sort of work needs to be done to better facilitate their engagement? You talked about the house where, you know, you got there and there were unlocked guns and 8 rounds of ammo and what have you. And, you know, at what point did the parents sort of also change their perceptions, or did they get there and you got there and you met with a lot of resistance?
So what you've described is kind of a mixed bag of responses that I've seen and have gotten over the years. Some parents are very welcoming, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening, to other parents not wanting law enforcement at their front door. I understand that. We usually will, and some parents are very receptive, some aren't. I think some parents are in denial occasionally. And what we will do when we're talking with parents, it is a partnership with the school. It's not just law enforcement. Certainly if what has happened or transpired crosses over into a criminal realm, that may change the dynamic a little bit. But we're looking at kind of explaining the situation to parents. This is what we know. This is why we're here. And really trying to find out what are some solutions that we can have to fix the issue. You know, the weapons in the household, you know, do they need gun locks? Do they need to just take those out and, you know, give them to another family member? Those are all things that we'll suggest to parents, so they aren't just left with, oh, your child has a problem, we're walking away now. It is, we're giving them solutions and connecting them with the school district so that they can do the best on their end. It's a partnership. The parents aren't just out there on their own. We're there to support them as well.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to say I really appreciate those last comments, and I wanted to say I'm a school board member in Hillsboro, and I wanted to say that the school resource officers have such an amazing impact on our schools, not only for this what you're speaking of on the safety issue, but on the other side of that, of creating a positive role model and with the students to officer. And I think that you can alleviate some of those issues, because there's a trust factor of people really coming in to realize that, you know, you're a good guy and you're there. And so I just can't say enough about the SRO program. And I'm just kind of curious, and I take that offline, I'm curious, like statewide, what that kind of looks like within our school districts. You know, I'm just, just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative McLean.
The one comment that you folks made that I thought was so important was the fact that the team approach and a wide variety of folks that are a part of the student's life is such an important part of that assessment. I think teachers for a while, I know in my 42 years, I was always worried I was going to miss something. You know, that I wouldn't see somebody that was isolating themselves, or I wouldn't see something that was bullying of another student, that I would miss it. And one person with one set of eyes can't do it all. And so that's what I loved about your presentation, was trying to make sure that everybody understand it's only when we're all together, working together, and observing together and supporting together, that we have a chance to really make a difference. Mm-hmm. But I thank you for your work.
And when we had smaller class sizes, we're able to do that a little easier. The only thing I have is Sheriff Roberts. When we had the big report presented to us last session, or the session before, it was a very good report on school safety and some of the recommendations that you had. Is that online someplace that either this committee or other people could access? You can get the information to us, but it was an excellent report, and actually some very, very good feedback from FBI and federal law enforcement on what they were doing in Oregon. Unfortunately, it was precipitated by UCC and Reynolds and some of these others, but do they have that online?
I believe we have OSP coming up, and I believe it's on their
and they can do
their
it.
Site, yes.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, and thanks
thank
for
you.
What you're doing. And I
thanks.
Reiterate
so
the SROs. We didn't have them when I taught, and they're an invaluable part of the school system
thank
now.
You.
So thank you. Okay, so now
Madam Chair, if I could invite our next presenters
please.
Up. Rebecca David and Jody Sherwood from Oregon State Police, if you folks could come up. And as they're grabbing a seat, I just want to start off by complimenting the state police, who has worked diligently to get the text tip line going. I wanted to tell you that it was an enormous task that went live in January. You're going to hear more about it, but what is really exciting to me is I believe wholeheartedly that it is actually saving lives. And so my hat is off to the state police and their incredible work. But as I kind of move on to tell you about Safe Oregon Student Tip Line, Rebecca David, the Oregon State Police Public Safety Services Bureau, she's the operations director, and then Jody Sherwood from Oregon State Police is a school safety tip line project manager. It's going to talk more about that. But before we begin our presentation, and to provide you some context, I just want to take one moment. The tip line and safety assessment that we've been talking about earlier, these two work hand in glove. It's receiving the tips, and then when we do get those tips, how do we address them, and how do we make sure that we don't miss anything? The tip line provides that anonymous support to report threats and also threats of self-harm. The safety assessment teams help schools respond to those threats and ensure services are provided to change behavior. And together, the tip line and safety assessment teams will not only save lives, as I've mentioned, but they will change lives. So once again, I'm going to turn it over to the state police, and a big credit to them for the hard work in getting this off. So.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon. Hello, Chair Doherty. For the record, my name is Rebecca David. I'm the Bureau Operations Director of the Public Safety Services Bureau of the Oregon State Police. Just for some context of what my bureau helps to accomplish, we have our two dispatch centers, our IT division, our Criminal Justice Information Systems Division, or CJIS, Central Records, and the School Safety Tip Line, which we're here to talk to you about today. In 2014, the legislature established the Oregon Task Force of School Safety, which you've heard about many times. In 2015, the task force made a report to the state legislature that you mentioned earlier, which is on the Oregon State Police website under the task force pages.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So for those recommendations were the statewide threat assessment system, which you've heard about today, a statewide school floor plan database, standardized terminology for emergency response, and the statewide safety tip line, which was enacted in 2016 under House Bill 4075. And that House bill directed the state police to establish the tip line. The goal of the school safety tip line is to allow students to report concerns on school safety and harmful acts via text messaging, calling, mobile app, email, and the internet. And my colleague Jody is going to explain more to you of why those various formats are so important for our kids. Oregon State Police is providing this tool. It's through a vendor-provided solution. And the focus is on public schools at this point. We do have a couple private schools, but we're really focusing on kindergarten through 12th grade. And we'll come back for the community colleges and universities as we get rolling. Oregon State Police partners with schools to help us build a system that works on their end. Again, as law enforcement, it's not our normal role to be in education, and we knew that just the way we perceive the world is not the way that our children do. We had a great partnership with Intermountain Education Service District and Hermiston School District up in the Umatilla, Morrow, and Union County area, and we continue to work with them. That relationship began back in October, and they have been instrumental in providing us feedback, not only from the students' perspective, but the administrators as well. We went live with the system on January 31st, 2017, and what that means is the tip line is set up and fully functional. Schools need to sign up so that we have proper contact information, and Jody will speak more to that. If a student does call from a school that has not signed up, we do our best to try to get enough information to get it to the right school, and we'll help our call center doing that.
Thank you. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Jody Sherwood. I'm a project manager with Oregon State Police.
I wanted to start by showing you a little bit about how the students can actually submit tips through the system. They can submit tips in five different ways. They can email, they can call, they can text, they can download the mobile application, or they can access through our web portal. What we are seeing, and since we've been in existence, we've launched this in January, and the pilot schools have started using it first. We have about 125 tips in the system. Most students are using the mobile application and the web form. We have not had a student call directly.
They don't do that.
We've had a couple parents call, which I'll explain a little bit. And some are emailing, some are texting. We do like to focus on the mobile application, the web form, or the email because we get more of a conversation. Texting can real quickly turn into a one-way conversation, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. Our website, safeoregon.com, is where you can go and look at information about the tip line. We actually created the website, the look and feel, the name Safe Oregon was created with the group of students that I showed you earlier. They were very instrumental in making this be a resource that students would find it interesting and informative. On the website, students can go find more information about what Safe Oregon is all about. Parents can go find information, and schools can find information about how to sign up. There's actually a rotating graphic on the front with different quotes from students, and those are actual Oregon students. They were very helpful with the name Safe Oregon. We looked at Michigan, which has okay to say, and Colorado, which has safe to tell. And as much as they appreciated those systems, they wanted it to be more about the responsibility for the student, and that's to keep a Safe Oregon, rather than focusing on the tattletale or the narc aspect of it. So I thought that was very thoughtful from them. And we'll continue to part with them over time, especially after we go back to next school year, to see how it's still resonating with students and working with them. This is a glance at our mobile application and our web reporting form. On the website, you can actually go look at the web reporting form. The same questions that are asked there are the same questions that are asked on the mobile app or in the email or through the process, so you can know and understand a little bit more about those questions. With our vendor-provided solution, the vendor that we have partnered with is in 25 other states with 2,700 other schools, so we've learned a lot about the questions that he asked. He has much experience in and been very helpful for us in setting this up. I thought it might be a little more flashy and attractive and grabbing, but students, when they have something to report, they really do want to get down to the detail of how they can report the information. As much information as we can is pre-populated. For example, a school that signs up, their information would start to pre-populate as they type in the letters of the school or the name of the town that they're with. All of the tips are looked at by tip line technicians through our vendor provided solution. So any time of the day, any day of the year, somebody's looking at the tips that come in. It's very important for our rural areas. We've heard quite a bit, as they wear multiple hats as many school administrators do, rural or urban, and they like the idea that there's somebody in the middle of the night that's looking at these tips, that's paying attention to them if it's something that they need to know right away. And tip line technicians, what they're looking at for the urgency of the tip and how quickly do we need to get it to someone to take a look at, and they're also categorizing it by subject. So is it a harassment, is it bullying, so they can help the school as they start looking into the information. An important part that folks want to know about is that we don't filter anything out. We don't screen any of the information. We provide everything that we learn or everything that we're able to grab through the tip, through the information as we receive it, we provide it on to the folks that are following up on the tips. We work real closely with the tip line technicians, and we've developed an operation manual. We will monitor with them on a monthly basis if necessary to keep updating the operational manual so it has the Oregon flavor that we want and we expect through that. An important part for local area folks to know and understand that if there's any reason that a student confuses this for 911, or maybe they see or observe or hear something that they're not clear should be a 911 call, we will help get that information to the local dispatch center. When a school actually signs up, we ask for that information. There's over 40 dispatch centers in the state, so it's really important that we have the exact information to be able to report that for the school. We'll either do that with the student on the phone, or we'll make that call for them depending on what happens. And if we do have an incident that is in the critical or urgent category, that critical means we know the information we receive so that somebody is at harm, our tip line technicians through our service level agreement have 2 minutes to get that information to the local dispatch center. They'll simultaneously, the person next to them will be calling the school and let them know the information that we're sharing with their local dispatch. If it's information that's not exactly clear but needs local area to look at it, and we're afraid that it is something that somebody could be in harm, our tip line technicians have 10 minutes to get that information. information. But most of the information and what we're seeing already is in the standard category, and we have 90% of the calls up on the screen are expected to be in this category. That's with the national, what I told you about with the vendor with his experience. We're seeing in Oregon, and we still need a chance to figure out our Oregon percentage, we're seeing about 98% of the calls so far, or the tips that have come in have been in that standard category. So it's the information that schools deal with today, what they hear at their front counter or what they hear from a phone call or an email to their school. But these are the anonymous and confidential tips of information that students feel that they need to share. And then we track all other types of tips. If for any reasons students are using the system in a different way than we anticipated, we want to know that and see what we can do to maybe advance the system going forward. When schools sign up, they receive a marketing packet of information, so posters and stickers are mailed out to them. They receive access to the back-end system, the dashboard.
We have stickers.
Hey, look at that. Thank you. I appreciate that. We provide for them information based on the amount of students that they have inside their school. If they would like posters printed in different languages, right now we have them offered in six different languages. Those you see up on the screen, Spanish, Vietnamese, Russian. We also offer now in Mandarin. We're working on Arabic and Somalian. And as we make those more available, we'll put them inside the system, that back-end dashboard that the school has access to, and they can print other posters as they need them. We also provide logos and other information for schools to add to their school computers, or some schools that each one has an individual iPad, if you will. So on the amount of tips that we received so far, remember we just launched this in January. We have 260 schools that have signed up to use the service so far. I've actually went out and spoke to many of them, all the top 20 school districts in Oregon as far as population. I've spoken to all but one, and they're still on our radar to go talk to this year. So we are getting there, and in that 90 days, we're very pleased with having 260 individual schools signed up. 1,000 more to go, but we'll work on it, and we'll need everybody's help to be able to do that, especially on sharing information on the existence of the tip line. But the majority of the reports that we're seeing so far are very thoughtful reports from students, most of them concerned about another student's well-being. Mm-hmm. It may be my friend is depressed today, they seem more depressed than ever, I think somebody needs to speak with them. It may be an observation where somebody saw someone else being bullied or harassed, and they are not hesitant to give the story and the full names of the individuals that they see and observed. We've seen sexual harassment. We have seen, we had a threat where a student had emailed two other students and said this was the day that he was going to kill them, and he did not show up at school that day. So very terrifying for folks, and so students were able to report that through the tip line. We have seen a large number of incidents of a best friend that observed a friend who's been cutting, and so they're able to report it this way. And the school, who is masterful at this, is able to go to the student who's been cutting and say, I recognize and I think that maybe I can help you out. And then they can go to the student that reported it and keep it confidential and talk with them about if they observe other behaviors happening, about what they can do to help that person. They're very, very good at that. We have seen, really the tip line.
Just a little bit back from the microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Very sensitive.
I am growing closer, honey. Excuse me. We are seeing reports of students that maybe have been arguing, and a friend is worried that it might escalate to fighting. So teachers or administrators are able to intervene and step in. On those parent tips, that we are seeing a few of those, that's really more on a parking issue, or it's another way for a parent to report an issue, and so they're not hesitant to do that. We're seeing a small handful of that. We sure want to continue to encourage parents to use the adult reporting systems and the processes that exist in schools so that we can leave the tip line available for students. But there have been a handful of parents that have reported bullying or incidents to their own child that they feel that they want to report through the tip line. So we're able to share that information. And so for the next steps for the tip line, we will spend the next 90 days really focusing on that back-end process. We've learned quite a bit from the schools and those that have signed up and how they've used the system, and we want to continue to make it even better. We're still adjusting the system. I was out just last week in all the way from Bonanza to Gold Beach, stopping at Keno and Powers and Medford and Grants Pass and Klamath Falls. Some of those schools have already signed up, but they actually weren't getting tips, so it was a knock on their door to say, how's it going, what do you need, and learn about about what's happening there inside that process. Very good conversations, and that's where it really helps the schools to have that local effort and local help pushing them and helping them and helping them make the connections with their law enforcement. Which there are several schools out there that don't have a school resource officer program, or they don't connect with their law enforcement this way because their law enforcement maybe just be a handful of folks there to help them. You know, the idea of the tip line is that students are growing up with it, so starting in the elementary school, and they know and learn it and understand it so they can use it as they go to their middle school or to their high school.
You are starting at the lower levels.
That's right. Every school, elementary, it's still important to sign up, especially in schools that have fourth, fifth, sixth grade, where we're seeing suicide concerns even at that grade range. So, best practice, we'll be able to share inside that dashboard with schools. So if Klamath Falls is experiencing something that they've been very successful at, we can share in our back-end dashboard with schools in Pendleton, for example, and they can learn from each other on how that process is going. And then we really want to think long-term with our system and the sustainment of this. This isn't just a one-time sign-up. It's a matter of helping students understand month-to-month that the system is still there, and then when something is relevant to them and something happens in their school, they remember that the tip line exists. And then the cycle of new school year and helping them move forward. So we'll keep working on that. We're seeing success in schools that give the charge to a leadership student-led group to talk about this and how they can promote it without inside their schools. We actually have a group from Hermiston School District who's today is at the, I believe there's a student council group. They're actually presenting today on the tip line, so they're sharing it, and that was their idea and their thoughts to be able to do something. So we're very happy about that. And then we want to keep improving. We had a conversation with Colorado last month. Their tip line has been in existence for 15 years. We talked to them about what would they do differently now after they've learned, and learning as much as we can. And we're very much the same as far as how our reporting process happens and how our tip line happens. And they too are experiencing most of their reports, someone concerned about another person's well-being. Last year they had 977 suicide tips, and all but 3% were somebody reporting about somebody else. So 3% were those self-reported needing help type of calls. So, and I'll leave you with the last one on the screen, or you have it with you as far as a success story. This is from one of our middle schools, which seems to be the most active. Once this tip line is up and running, we expect them to see 2 to 3 tips a week inside their tip line. It's not a matter of all of a sudden you're going to get a bunch of tips and worrying about following up on. But this is a school that spent 10 minutes at the beginning of one day in each classroom talking to the students about the tip line, the existence of the tip line, but then the responsibility to use it and how they can help keep their school safe with it. We're also seeing other schools include this in their health curriculum, for example, where they're talking about the responsibility to use Safe Oregon not only for yourself but for others. We are seeing some schools that are signing up because they know they have a suicidal student and they can't get information from the friends. And so if they offer this anonymous or confidential tip line, the hope is that they can get some more information through that process. We're seeing some schools also sign up because their students have been harassed or threatened, or they're being told that, they'll be asked to leave the country tomorrow. Some schools are signing up for that process too, so that students have a way to report that information and not be concerned. I think that's all I have for my presentation, and then I appreciate the opportunity to come speak to you about this today.
Any questions?
Okay, any questions? Okay, Representative Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm in the advertising and promotion business in my other life, so I have to ask, do you need any help in outreach to schools or directly to kids? The reason why I ask this is I know the Oregon Association of Broadcasters has a particular program where they will get behind periodically a new initiative. And I'm just wondering, is it best to reach the schools by individual visits or correspondence of some kind, or is it best to reach the kids via radio or the media and have them bugging their schools about getting started?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Doherty. Vice Chair Wilson, great to meet you. To talk more. The bill, I'll be calling. The bill did have a provision in it for accepting donations, by the way, for the tip line. So once we have this operationalized, we'll look at partnering with some folks in the state to help with a push on that for money to help market. I think a good balance between what you mentioned, getting to the schools and also talking to the students and talking about the reality of how they can help sign their school up and lead this effort. I think we'll see some of that come out of the student council meeting that is occurring today statewide. But yes, both, all. We do have some calls we've received from folks that have TV spots that may be able to help us out with. We want to hit that critical mass where we have enough schools signed up so that it is understood and relevant to the communities. We wouldn't want to have a bunch of students calling the tip line if their school wasn't signed up just yet, but we will continue to work on that process.
Okay. If I might follow, how did you do in Grants Pass? That's where I'm from.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
Did you get some books?
Vice Chair Wilson, yes. I met with the county school district there. Okay. Actually, several of their schools are already signed up. There were ones that I was stopping in to ask how they were going. I didn't meet with the city group there, but I plan to do that.
Okay.
But they're very energetic about using the system.
Okay,
and see, and actually, in one of your middle schools, it's already been shown very effective.
Yeah, good. Excellent.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had two kind of questions. One, I wanted to say, you know, I really appreciate when there's so many students that are in real difficult situations and real suicide rate growing amongst teenagers. My son works at a rural district and had one of the students that had committed suicide, and just a real ripple effect throughout the community when everybody really knows everybody. So to be able to have a system in place that says this is a safe place for you to be able to share this information, again, I appreciate that. And as much as it can get marketed, I think that would be fantastic. My question is in regards to around mandatory reporting. How does that work when a situation comes up, then there's the mandatory, you know, that you have to?
Yes, Chair Doherty, Representative Solomon. Mandatory reporting, just so that I understand, if the information comes in through the tip line, we share it with the schools, and if there's information there that is falls into the mandatory reporting, then they continue and follow that process to be able to do so.
Okay. Because that was my question, is the follow-up that you have from the schools, and I noticed you had the system, we've got the 2 minutes, we've got the 10 minutes, we've got the 1 hour, so.
Yes.
And that's been working out fine.
It's been working very well, yes. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have you come against any resistance from any of the schools? I sure would hope not, but I'd like to hear about it if you have.
Yes, Chair Doherty, Representative Springer. There are schools that do say, thank you, we understand, we'll take it under advisement, or they feel very strongly that they know their students very well and maybe they don't need a tip line. We know that we also have to prove to some schools that it works and it works well, and they'll be ready to sign on board. Many schools are busy with a lot of different activities, and yes, we do hit some resistance. There is a maybe not as much understanding on what the task force is and why it exists and why this was a result, but those are conversations that we do face-to-face so that we can have further conversations, and we usually get folks there, but it is a process, and we do have some pushback.
Well, that's unbelievable. That is absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't care how busy you are. So what would help and assist the task force in addressing some of those concerns without saying, hey, this is what we're going to do for your benefit? What would help in that area?
Yeah, if I could, Chair Doherty and Representative Springer, I think that one of the things, and I'll turn to my colleagues here on the left as well to comment on this, but I think stepping forward on that threat assessment, because it is bringing everybody together to say this is really the next step, because right now some folks don't see it, and to comment on some of the concerns about self-harm, which I really see is, to me, a tragedy, is kids are suffering in isolation and suicide, right? And part of which is if there's just an avenue for them to ask for help. They can't go to their friends. They can't go to their parents. And that's why I so much believe on having this on a student ID card and having that conversation, that if you know somebody, it will start that conversation, and they will reach out. Yeah. And that's where I really believe it will save
lives. And could you mention the student ID card? Because I don't know if you covered that, but we did that. That actually, if you want to talk about student ID card.
Yeah, on the student ID card, as we put Safe Oregon in the tip line, how they can reach out. Because
as we talked about, this is how do we roll this out to youth, to parents, to everybody, and create that avenue where they can say something and reach out for that help. So did you have any other comments?
Yes, Chair Daugherty, Representative Springer, I appreciate the question. I think that this is a opportunity that we all need to maybe do just a little bit in a different and better way, where Oregon State Police doesn't necessarily walk into schools. We only do that after we get the call from the local area. Here's a difference that we're trying to make. I think if there's any opportunity to make that local call to the schools, just making sure they're aware of the tip line and the intention behind it would be really helpful to the tip line. There are still schools that haven't heard about it, and we do our best as much as we send letters to the school district and to the ESD sharing that information. And I think the more we'll hit that critical mass at some point where we're at 260 schools, we'll hit half, and then more of the conversation will be shared with others. We're doing our best to get to as many association as we can to present the information. The legislation fell just this short of making it mandatory, and I think that that push forward, helping them understand that this isn't just an Oregon State Police expectation, this is a community expectation, would be really helpful on the push.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I give you the name of the seven high schools, but I've got about 35 schools in my district, tell you what my school districts are, can you tell me if they're participating or not, and if that's by choice or not?
And we will do that offline.
And then we can, yeah, absolutely, and then we can introduce them to the wonderful opportunity.
Yes, yes.
And Chair Daugherty and Representative Springer, just to let you know, even in our county, I will tell you, we are trying to move ahead. This is like a big lift. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that our schools are resistant, part of which we're trying to figure out how we can all come together. And that's one of the challenges. I mean, I just was at an ESD, and they're all thrilled about this next step, but we're trying to get there. And that's where, honestly, your leadership can help kind of set that focus and direction.
Well, in school districts for years, they've been given unfunded mandates. Yes. And another unfunded, and so on and so forth. And so I can see part of the skepticism between ESDs, between Oregon School Boards Association, between COSA, between OEA, all of those sort of groups also, right, would love, I know that they would love to work with you to get the word out. Because I heard this presentation a while ago at the police academy, and it was just, I mean, you guys have been like, it rolled out 2 weeks, I think it had been there, and you already had like 100 and some odd schools. So the idea is good. I give Representative Jeff Barker some credit, because he was the one that really pushed the idea of getting the student ID and getting the tip line, and let's not wait, let's get this thing going and going to have it going now. So anyway, any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
As I say, this is a good thing, because it is, especially if the kids know that there's a safe place to call without their friends, you know, hearing about it and so on and so forth. It's very good. But anything that we can do, and I have stickers for you guys, but anything that we can do, we'd be glad to help, because it's one of those things that, I mean, I taught in the 70s and 80s when schools were safer and kids, I think, felt a little safer. But now it's just, I don't know how some of them can go to school every day. But we're trying to help one kid at a time. Okay, but thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, anything else? Any questions? Okay, well, that's all that we have on the agenda. Do we have anything that we need to talk about?
That's it.
Okay, are we meeting on Wednesday? Yes,
yes.
We have things to do on Wednesday. I don't know how many bills we're going to be having coming across from the Senate, because an awful lot of the bills that they had in the Senate Ed were higher ed. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what we do. So with that, adjourn committee.
Schools.
Thank you.
Right, there you go.
Matt.
I got a list for you.
Matt.
I got a list for you.